Okay, my name is Tyrone Works. I was in Greenford Prison for close to 37 years. I was a life term prisoner. I was there because when I was younger, I was, you know, on the streets, and I got involved in some activities that was not only destructive to me, my community, but also to my own family, you know. So I wound up getting convicted of second-degree murder, although I was not the trigger man when it happened. I was a couple blocks away when the crime happened. But I was found guilty on conspiracy, and I was sentenced to a mandatory life without parole sentence. Every state, they have a pardons board or clemency board, and Pennsylvania has a pardon board also. So when you're a life-term prisoner, we're not eligible for parole. The one way that you can have an opportunity to get out is to file for a commutation of your sentence. Now, a commutation of your sentence is different from a pardon. A pardon is where they forgive the crime and take it off your record. A commutation is where they just change your sentence. So I was able to file for a commutation sentence, and former Governor Rendell commuted my sentence on December the 14th, 2010. I walked out of Greenford March 14th, 2011. For me, you know, my first went in Greenford, I was young, 23 years old, kind of cocky, arrogant. I was bitter, angry. I was a self-destructive young man. And I didn't really understand at the time what was the true nature of my sentence, because I thought I was going to appeal and win a new trial and eventually get out. And I did that for a while, about 25 years. And it was not until about 25 years I began to really internalize the fact that I was going to be there for the rest of my life. That was a transition that that was really painful. And you know, I went in as one person. Within 6 months, I transformed into the person that my mother and father raised me to be. I went to school and those kind of things. I got involved in a lot of great programs. And so, you know, although I had the life sentence, what was important to me is that I leave a legacy, because I have a daughter and I had siblings and stuff like that. And I wanted them to know that although I was in prison, you know, I was a... and I was a good person. And I like to say that there were some acts of compassion that were shown towards me that set me on this road to change my life. And, you know, when you first go into prison, they do this assessment. You got to take all these battery of tests, you know, socially, intellectually, psychologically, take all these tests. So I did all those tests, and there was a guy named Mr. Bello, who was a counselor at Greenford Prison, but he was also at night an ABE teacher, that's Adult Basic Education. And he was the guy that was going over my assessment, and he was explaining to me that all my test scores were low. I was reading at a second grade level, my math skills were third grade, my comprehension was really low. I thought I was dumb anyhow, you know. Education had no value to me. When I grew up, I was an elementary school teacher, kind of put into me that I was dumb, that I couldn't learn. And so, and I, in my mind, I'm telling myself, well, if I'm dumb and I can't learn, why should I even go to school? So he explained all this to me about my test scores and things like that. And he said, but what's interesting is, although all your test scores are low, he said, your IQ is above average. He said, so you can do this work, you're just not applying yourself. And it was at that moment where he saw something in me. And normally when you go to prison, I mean, you're just a statistic, everything's a formality. But this guy showed a personal interest in me, and he showed, and it was an act of compassion for him to take an interest in me and to put me in that ABE class, because that was the beginning of this transformational road that I got on. And then so the second thing that was really transformational for me was, so when new guys came into the prison, I mean, you could tell who the new people were. And the older lifers back then actually mentored younger lifers when they came in. And so this older lifer came to me one day. This is only about 6 months into my incarceration. And he said, look, man, we're having this seminar this Saturday. It's going to be about leadership, group dynamics. And he said, we want to invite you down to participate. It's an all-day thing. And I'm looking at him like, man, I'm just trying to get out of this prison. I'm not trying to get caught up in this prison thing, you know what I mean? But, you know, he worked with me, talked to me. So I said, you know, okay, I'll go. So they had this guy that was leading the seminar. He was a seminar facilitator. Because I didn't want to be there, I was, like, lagging behind and everything. I wasn't really paying attention. So when he broke for lunch, I was, like, the last person in line. And I go, it was buffet style, I get my tray, I go through the line to get my food, and I'm looking around the room trying to find some way to sit. There was only one seat left to sit in. It was right across from that seminar director. And I sat in front of him, and him and I engaged in this conversation. And I was telling about myself that I was a lifer, that I shouldn't be there, that I got railroaded, I'm making all these excuses about why I was there. And so he said, man, he said, you know what? He said, you seem like a very angry, bitter, destructive young man. So I said, absolutely. I said, I got a lot to be angry and bitter about. I said, man, they railroaded me. I said, I was two blocks away. I didn't kill nobody, and I'm here for the rest of my life. He said, man, he said, yeah, all that's true. He said, maybe you were railroaded. Maybe you're innocent. Maybe none of these things should happen to you. He said, but the bottom line is, so you got a wife, you got a daughter, you got siblings, you got parents. He said, you got the man up. They're going to need you. And I'm looking at him like, man, I'm the one in prison. Why are they going to need me for? You know? So he said, I don't know what your future is going to be. He said, you might be here for the rest of your life. You might get out. You might die here. I said, I don't know. He said, but I want you to consider one thing. He said, I want you to try to create a great life for yourself while you're here. Create a great life for myself. I said, I'm in a mass security prison where I see people on drugs, people getting stabbed, fights. How can I create a great life for myself in this kind of environment? So, you know, I just wrote him off as a guy that was clueless, didn't know anything about prison, didn't know anything about me, about my experience. So I just wrote him off. And then ironically, like a week later, somebody got stabbed in the prison, so they locked the prison down for a week. So now I'm locked in my cell for a week. You know, I watch a little TV, read newspaper, write some letters. You know, about a fourth, fifth day, I'm just laying on my bunk. Only thing I was focusing on was how I'm going to get out of this prison. How I'm going to get out. How I'm going to get out. That's all I'm thinking about. And somehow my mind drifted to the conversation I had with this guy about creating a great life for myself. And then, you know, in this moment of clarity, I had this epiphany. I mean, it just like hit me like a ton of bricks. Came into my mind was the day I got sentenced and all the noise that was behind me, the wailing, the weeping, the crying, the yelling from my family, my wife, my daughter, my sisters, my friends crying. Across on the prosecution side was the victim's family, and they were crying and weeping. But it hit me that day in my cell. It didn't register to me the day that it happened, the day I got sentenced. It was in that moment, and I thought about it, and I said, wow, all this time I was focused on me, and it hit me that all this pain that I had caused my family and the victim's family, and I'm gonna tell you right now, man, that all that bitter and anger and resentfulness that I was carrying around, it was like weighing me down. And in that moment when I realized the pain that I had caused my family, the victim's family, man, it just left me. And you know, that's when I began to go through this process of some reflection, saying, man, like, I'm out here talking about I'm innocent, I didn't do anything wrong, I'm railroaded and all that. And I just begin at that moment to say, man, I got to take responsibility for my life. I mean, not just my crime. You know, the crime was one thing. I was willing to take responsibility for the crime. But more importantly, I had to start to take responsibility for my life and what direction it was going to take and how I was going to make this up to my family and the victim's family, stuff like that. So a couple of days later, man, I came up my cell. I went to all those guys I was hanging out with, smoking weed, drinking alcohol, acting a fool with, and I told them, I said, Diggs, man, I'm out. Don't come to me with this crap no more. I said, I'm out. I said, I'm going to school, and you know, that's what it's going to be. And like, I felt so light, man. I just felt different. You know, I kind of felt like the guy in the story of Plato's Allegory of the Cave, where, you know, they were in the cave, you know, shooting shadows on the wall. That was their reality. One guy gets out, goes in the sunlight, and he says, wow, you know, I don't want to go back and tell anybody else. Man, this is not real. The real world's out here, you know. So that's kind of how I felt. I wanted something that I can go back and share with other guys and say, look, man, the way we thinking in terms of the values and cultures of the street, that's not real. Here's the real deal. I guess peace means for me, especially in light of the fact that I was a guy that was heavily involved in a lot of destructive, violent things. And so I think peace means to me is just being in harmony with, you know, those around you, with your environment, with the things you are connected to, you know, and looking through a lens that is forward-looking instead of backwards-looking. That's kind of how I see peace. Yeah, well, when I was incarcerated, I was able to find peace in that environment because of the way I saw myself, the way I related to the environment. Some guys, when we were in prison, we were in this process of trying to find ways we can get involved in the community to reduce the violence and the crime in our community. Because, I mean, we sat there and watched the news and seen all these young guys coming in. And we wanted to try to find a way to bring peace to our communities. When we was in this class, we was talking about all these social issues, about crime, justice, peace. And so we had some really profound discussions that made us go back and say, wow, we keep looking outward, like, looking at those guys, they're out there creating this crime, creating this violence, right? And so we had to have these discussions about, well, how do we create peace within ourselves? I mean, we got to focus on us. And that would help us to better facilitate peace in the community because we felt like we were the progenitors of violence and destruction in the community. And we felt that the next generation of young guys was modeling on our behavior. So instead of looking at them, we had to look at ourselves. And so we used to sit in these circles down in the auditorium and have these discussions about, you know, why did we gravitate towards violence? Why did we gravitate towards crime? Why did we do the things we did to lead us to prison? And so guys was coming up with all these excuses about, well, see, I grew up, you know, I was on drugs, stuff like that. And you know, we all kind of got to the point where we begin to challenge the contradictions, like, yeah, I love my children. So then I say, well, if you love your children, how you participate in, you know, selling drugs and stuff like that? You know, so we kind of heightened the contradictions. And so we held these focus groups. And what we realized was that we were all the same. We thought the same way. We had the same values. We had the same beliefs from a street crime context. So we kind of codified all of these values and beliefs. And so we used that as a model to work guys through a process to bring peace within their lives, you know, and hopefully that would translate to bringing peace within their families, you know. Doing this kind of work heightened the level of awareness for me in terms of peace and how do I bring more peace into my own life. I think people, it's a natural tendency to look outward, to look at your environment, look at the other people you're associated with, because I guess we all like to see ourselves as angels, as good people and stuff like that. And when there are bad things happening around us, we always look out and look at other people. So we wanted to take that process and turn it inward and begin to look at ourselves. And you know, when we had these conversations, man, light bulbs was going off in guys' heads, you know. And so now my responsibility now is to implement this model out in the community, to get guys together to have these conversations, to get them to begin to look inward. And I have this quote where I always tell people that the prison wall is not there just to keep us in, but to keep the public out so they don't know who's behind the wall. So I recognize that people think that, oh, we got these guys in prison, they're monsters, they're scary. So while I'm out, I talk to people, I dress a certain kind of way. Not only am I representing myself, I'm representing the guys inside. And I say, lifers look like me. They look like me. I mean, you know, we just human beings, guys who, you know, sometimes we're younger, we do irrational things, but that's not indicative of who they are as human beings. They make some poor choices, some poor judgments in their life, and that leads them to do destructive things. And at some point, they wake up. I mean, they find their humanity. And I try to represent that with people and say, look, they're just like me. I said, just a few months ago, a year or so ago, I was a monster, irredeemable, had no social value, that I was supposed to die in prison. And here I am walking the streets of Philadelphia. And I have no fear or concern about telling anybody that I served 36 years in prison. Because I want people to know this is what a person in prison looks like. They look like me. There was like a 3-4 year period, man, when I was back in my mind, I was being eaten up inside, you know, because the one thing I hadn't done that nagged me, I kept trying to like push it away. Ah, that's not necessary to do that. I'm changed, I'm transformed, different. But what was nagging me and what was really preventing me from really finding true peace and having my spirit clean was the events of my incarceration I had lied about. to my family, to all my friends. You know, I was telling people I was innocent. You know, I didn't have anything to do with this crime. I was two blocks away. And so I felt that if I was going to truly move forward and be free of my past, I had to go back and clean that mess up. I had to go back and apologize to everybody for lying to them. So what I did was I sat down, I wrote a letter to the judge that sentenced me. I wrote a letter to the prosecutor that tried me. I wrote a letter to my lawyer who defended me. I wrote a letter to the victim's family, apologizing to all of them for lying that I had nothing to do with this crime. Now, I didn't have anything to do with killing a person, but I know that my decisions early on to be with guys who had guns in a car, just like the losses, I felt just as guilty as if I had pulled the trigger myself. And I had lied to everybody, tried to disassociate myself from those events. And so I needed to clean that up, to bring myself back into integrity. So I wrote all those people's letters, and then I sat down, I wrote my mother and father a 4-page letter of apology for not only lying about my crime, but really squandering the enormous sacrifice they made so I could have a life. And I really wanted to apologize to them. I wanted them to really see me as the man they really raised me to be. And I wanted to do that. I needed to do that not only for them, but for the very cleansing of my own spirit. And I think that all of us as human beings, we hurt people. And I always say, I tell people that there are a lot of great forces in this world. You know, number one being love. I mean, you show people love, that can be transformative. I say, but the second most powerful force is forgiveness. And if you got to ask for it, you got to be willing to forgive people, and you got to be willing to ask for forgiveness. You know, I came up through some really tough circumstances where, about when I look back, they were sometimes really hopeless situations, but somehow I've come through them, and just looking at my own personal situation, I got to be hopeful that things can change, not only in my life, but just our world in general. You know, I got to stay hopeful that more people who become aware of the situation that we're really in, and that it's going to be dependent on us and the way we relate to one another, whether or not we're going to have true peace in our lives. But I'm hopeful that that can happen.